listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Nathan Zagura, Manuel Hellman, Dakon, Dog Bowl and Berea, final show of 2014. Happy New Year to everybody listening. We're going to come back with our favorite Browns player of the season and also our most disappointing Browns player of the season. The kid, I have a feeling yours could be the same.
It's really, you know, a slap in the face to me. My two favorite Browns, Flash Gordon and Johnny Football. And now I have to call for him to be run out of town. So favorites, I mean, I guess my favorite.
What does that say about you as a judge of talent? Well, a judge of character.
I've always been known, you know.
Do you think I'm a good guy?
I do think you're a good guy, but I don't know if that's good or not.
No, seriously.
I don't either.
I've always liked the guys that talked a little trash and had a little personality, but they could always back it up. I was always a Deion guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Irvin.
Oh, Michael Irvin was my guy.
The playmaker.
But this is.
Do you think the playmaker? I was having this debate with Vince Condi, the friend of the show. Do you think who is the best Cowboys receiver ever? Is it the playmaker, or now has Dez? Is Dez more dominant, the playmaker? I think Dez is more dominant.
I only got one ring on my finger, but Michael Irvin's got three. Michael Irvin was the embodiment of a winning football player. Dez Bryant wants to win, and he wants to, but Michael Irvin was the embodiment. Did you see that You documentary? Yeah. He was one of the reasons they won there. He was one of the most winning football players ever to play.
But I would say right now that Dez Bryant is more dominant than Michael Irvin was.
More speed, yeah.
Yes. More speed, more size, more strength.
Third and eight versus San Francisco. You're down 3 points. You're driving. Who do you want running that slant?
Alvin Harper.
I want the playmaker.
Didn't Alvin Harper have the big touchdown in that game?
Daryl Johnson in the flat.
The playmaker is the man to make it. And if someone else made the play, it was just because everybody else was concentrating on the playmaker.
I think there was a story on one of those touchdowns on the what are those that I love? America's games.
Yes.
Didn't playmaker go to Alvin Harper's spot so that Alvin Harper had to go to his spot because he thought the ball was going to go to him, and then the ball went to Alvin Harper for the touchdown?
There may be some truth to that. One question, let me change it up a little bit, though, and I did love Michael Irvin. But do you think if Michael Irvin played in the era of today with Twitter and all the social media, would he have been able to survive with everything that was going on in his life off the field?
No. And I talked about that even earlier with Nathan, just being, for me, being a rookie in a new city in San Diego, you know, learning the ropes and developing relationships with your teammates and so on and so forth I wouldn't imagine, you know, having to look over your shoulder constantly at camera phones or pictures or feeling, in Johnny Manziel's case, it feels like he feels like he's got an obligation to his millions of Twitter followers to give them entertainment. Right. You know, and that's just not even the way I'm wired.
Yeah, but well, he's not even good on Twitter.
But you were also smart. You had a good group of guys that you were with. You guys had, like, a color-coded calendar to keep you on your schedule and to make sure that everything, like, was.
Yes, we were.
You were where you needed to be, doing what you needed to do.
A good group of guys that, you know, it actually helped that we all kind of had our own struggles. We all came from different backgrounds, from different schools, myself being from Ohio State, my one buddy's from the University of Maine, you know, undrafted free agent. We Antonio Gates, we ran with him too. Guy never played freaking football before, you know, and look what he's done. So, and we just held close, and then when it came time to get really, really good, which we did in San Diego, it's like we became the core of that team. And I think it was, in some cases, you know, our bond together of hanging out. And I don't know, you know, on the Cleveland Browns, you know, if it even exists. You know, I know Johnny might run with Terrence West, as we, you know, we talked to Terrence at Discount Drug Mart in Brunswick Hills, you know, last week.
And we know Joe does. Joe Hayden's tried to bond with Gordon. He's tried to do that with Johnny. He likes those guys. But, you know, I think it's, I don't know if it's just a different mentality in San Diego if you had stronger people overall on the team and then just the direction was good. And the young guys weren't as crazy. Like, I know you're crazy, but you weren't, like, that crazy.
No, I was not crazy. And I'll tell you what, the one thing that, you know, a lot of young guys are guilty in the National Football League, not so much the first-round guys, because the first-round guys get a lot of money, is some of the younger guys watch the other veterans who make multiple millions of dollars and have been doing so for years. So when they drive the fast car, have the big house, or have the nice Louis Vuitton bags and the hot woman on their arm, the young guys who are struggling but making good money, you know, in the National Football League, you know, $300,000, $400,000, they feel the need to assume those same things. And it's like, well, if he has it, why can't I go get it? And you start running and following. It's follow the leader, you know. And it's almost, if you ever played it as a kid or even, you know, as a young adult, the game of tops. Well, he has this. Well, I want to go get that. Well, he drives this car. Well, I want to go get that car. And it's like, you know, you're kind of comparing. It's like, keep it up with the Joneses. And it's created in a locker room. And I think some of these young players succumb to those influences. And I think now more so than ever, because free agency, you know, you can swap teams so easily that, you know, guys are doing that throughout the league now.
So why does it work in some places and not in others? Can you pinpoint it? What do you do to fix the locker room?
Like, why does it work in New England? Why can New England take every problem child and fix it?
It's,
and what's is there one example from your career where you saw somebody who was getting wayward that was dealt with internally? How were they dealt with, and what was the success that came out of that?
Yeah, you know what? I really don't off the top of my head, but I say the one thing that you walk into in your reference to New England is you walk in with standards, and this is the way we do it. And if you don't do it this way, you won't have a job. And I think right now the Cleveland Browns, because the organization has been in disarray for the last 15 years, because they're so hungry to win that they give opportunity to young players, to veterans to come here and try to resurrect their career as they have in the past. I'm not so much referencing this season with, you know, just Dansby and Whitner because of their contributions, but we have a pipe dream of, well, let's do as much as we can and we hope we hit on one, you know, whereas instead of the New England Patriots set the standard, and if you don't meet their standard, you're not a New England Patriot, where the Browns flex and bend to try to mold players into something, and the Browns become, you know, who the players are, not the players become who the Browns are.
See, by just listening to what you're saying, it screams out to me that they almost have to make an example, and if it means taking a step backwards, and maybe you're right, Nate, that it's only flash, and you try to rehabilitate Johnny and Gilbert, but I think a statement has to be made that Mike Pettine is a no BS type of guy. And
I mean, right now, I'd be surprised. Would you be surprised if Josh Gordon is? I'd be more surprised today if Josh Gordon plays for the Browns in 2015 than if he doesn't.
I would agree with that. I almost think that you have to say, choose out of those three, one of them that you want to rehabilitate, and get rid of two of them, because that will make a huge statement in the locker room to guys like Joe Thomas and Joe Hayden that are consummate professionals that, look, this is the way it's going to be going forward. And I would have to think they would stand up and applaud.
Do you think Dez Bryant is the biggest kind of success rehab case around the NFL in kind of this modern era? Because he was, there was a while where he was maybe on his way out. They had to have somebody with them the whole time. Remember, Deion's like, I can't even be around him anymore. I'm done with him. I tried to help him. He doesn't want to help himself, etc. You know, Playmaker was in here last year. He tried to talk to Josh Gordon, but he said, you know, he can only help himself at the end of the day. Dez seems to have turned around. You hear no problems from him. He plays harder than anybody in the NFL and is a good citizen right now for those Cowboys.
He plays harder than anyone else, and he wants to win, which I think is a big difference. Flash, to me, doesn't care about winning. And, again, it pains me to say it because I was his biggest cheerleader. But when you watch him, it doesn't look like he's trying that hard, and it doesn't seem like he cares about winning. Dez Bryant at least is about winning. But what I'll say is Dez still has some sideline blow-ups.
Of course.
Yeah, sure. But
it comes from
it comes from a great place. It comes from that, from wanting to win, being a competitor. And just to go back, you know, it might have been even this past weekend watching the Dallas Cowboys when Dez was targeted in the red zone by Romo and they missed him. And on the very next throw, Romo throws a touchdown to Williams. And who's the first person that runs up to Williams and grabs him, picks him up with a big grin through the visor, you know, in his helmet, but Dez Bryant? When, you know, and I think in some situations you see Josh Gordon, it's like when he makes a play, it's about him. You know, when it was in Atlanta on his way back in, it was him beating his chest, you know, and him talking, you know, being him walking off the field, you know, jimmer jabbering about whatever he says about himself, but by himself too. No teammates around him, no one jumping on his back, celebrating it with him. It's him by himself. And I think that's, you know, in some cases a character flaw that people need to get over and be humbled, because this can be taken away very quickly.
I think you make a good point, though. I think you can deal with some off-the-field stuff if you know that that person only cares about winning. Because you can deal with those distractions because you know when they step on the field, they're going to give you everything they've got. And I think right now the problem is with these three knuckleheads, Gordon, Manziel, and Gilbert, you don't know that when you step on the field, you're getting everything that they've got.
Agreed. Even just from the, and I'm not saying Johnny could have continued in the game where he got hurt, but just compare the way he played versus Connor Shaw. I mean, he went down with a hamstring injury, and you would have thought that he ripped up his knee and was out for his career the way he just laid there.
Yeah, Connor Shaw was peeing blood after the game and
stayed in the game.
He's tough man. And I think Johnny's a tough guy too, but there is a difference. All right, so we were trying to do your favorites were Josh and Flash Gordon and Johnny Manziel, favorite Browns. Yeah. And you've just called for them both to be run out of town. Matt Wilhelm, your favorites on the Browns. Your favorite Browns player this year.
My favorite Browns player this year defensively is Carlos Dansby. I've got to go with the linebacker. And I just think the biggest reason is because Carlos came here and did a lot of talking about what he was going to do and how the team was going to play. And he backed every bit of that up. You know, his play, as you said, you know, should have, in your eyes, got voted in the Pro Bowl or at least an alternate for the Pro Bowl. But I think missing those few games kind of put him behind the eight ball from a production standpoint. But what he meant to the Browns was huge. Offensively, I am going to go with the big ugly, and I'm going to go with Joel Bitonio because he's part of the future. And he played so well as a rookie, but yet he still has such a big upside. And then I think that the combination that I want to see that we got only of, you know, a little bit of is him and, you know, Alex Mack playing next to each other. I mean, that for the next 5 years is going to be something special on the offensive line, which will predicate how successful we can be with Crowell and West and whoever is our quarterback in the future.
All right. My favorite Browns player this year, I think it's got to be Joe Haden, and I've learned a lot from just getting to talk to Joe Haden as much as I have this season. Watching him play at a high level, I thought he had that four-game stretch against Andre Johnson, A.J. Green, Julio Jones, and Sammy Watkins. It was as good as any stretch any corner's had in the NFL this year. He played through injuries. He battled the flu in a meaningless game against the Ravens and gave you everything he had just to be an example. He could have shut it down easily, but instead, even though he got paid, he got all that money, he wanted to lead and show these guys what it means to be a pro. Couldn't be a nicer guy on this team off of the field, and he's great on the field. I got an opportunity to do a couple events with him as well. I think Joe Haden is my guy for my favorite player on the Browns this year. Now, when we get into the rookies, I have a lot because I love this rookie class. But I think Joe Haden, Lockdown Joe, has been my favorite player on the Browns to watch, to get to work with, and just overall just a class act and a fine man for this team, for this city. And I think when you see a guy get paid the way that he did and come out in a little bit of a slump, I don't think he was healthy at the beginning of the year, battle back and then give everything you got, I think it says a lot about him as a leader and as a player for this team. Well-deserved second straight trip to the Pro Bowl. When we come back, we'll get into our most disappointing players this season. We'll take phone calls from you, 216-578-0850, on the final show of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford for 2014.